Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday, the 1st of September. Thank you to Hannah for Daybreak. You are listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme, with invited guests discussing the issues of the day. Today we're going to be talking about back to school, both in the Spain and the UK. We'll be talking about the use of masks and the health benefits otherwise, and anything else that crosses your radar or you want to make a viewpoint about. If you do want to get in touch with the show,
to contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Indeed, 952 78 4000, the phone number. Let's have a look at the front pages in the UK and also in Spain. Newspaper headlines: Marcus Rashford's rallying cry and school pupils 3 months behind. Let's have a look at more detail on those stories. Education Secretary Gavin Williamson tells the Daily Telegraph that this week's full reopening of schools in England and Wales brings fresh hope after a challenging few months. He says ensuring no child is left behind is a national priority and urges the whole nation to get behind them. The Daily Mirror says Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer is demanding Mr. Williamson set out a proper plan to protect pupils and ensure they can recover their lost education. The Guardian and the Daily Star reveal children face being sent home from school if they breach strict new coronavirus red lines, which include deliberately coughing or sneezing on someone or even pretending to as a joke. The Star is highly critical of the idea of suspending children when they've already missed too much valuable teaching time. Financial Times regards the return to schools as a crucial political test for Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who it says is facing growing criticism that he has lost his grip. The paper says the Prime Minister needs the reopening to go smoothly to pave the way for workers to go back to their offices. The Times has disappointing news for those who've been enjoying home working. They've been pushing in about a day more than before lockdown. Fears that people are lounging about in their pyjamas and getting little done may be unfounded, the paper says. It highlights a report by the National Bureau of Economic Research, which found that home workers spend an average of 49 minutes longer at their desks and attend more meetings. The independent digital newspaper says the government spent more than £120 million fighting disability benefit claims in the past 2 years, but lost three quarters of appeal at tribunal. Labour and disability campaigners express alarm at the amount of public money being used to fight such cases. The Department for Work and Pensions responds that complaints about the way it assesses claims dropped by a quarter over that period and insists it's committed to helping people get the support they are entitled to. As the BBC's new Director General, Tim Davey, takes over, Daily Express and the Daily Mirror warn that he faces a pensioners' revolt unless he brings back free TV licences for the over 75s. The Silver Voices campaign, that's a great name for a group. The Silver Voices campaign group says many pensioners plan to stop paying or spoil their checks in protest and urges Mr. Davey to work with the government to find a compromise. One option, he said by The Guardian to be considering is a Swedish-style tax, which would be reduced for those on lower incomes. Hackers are reported to be targeting virtual festivals, which have been a godsend for music lovers during lockdown. The Guardian says fraudsters are setting up fake pages to charge users to access live streams that should be free to view. And The Sun offers a luxury gift idea that's not to be sniffed at. A designer candle that smells of the River Thames near Dagenham. The item, with its additional notes of red bricks and nettles, is on sale at the department store Selfridges for £450. Right then. Going to El País in English, August ends with more than 5,000 new coronavirus cases a day in Spain, five times those detected in July. Spain's business elite turns up to hear the Prime Minister's call for a new political climate. Super spreaders who have caused 140 people, who have infected 140 people, could have caused coronavirus outbreak on Gran Canaria. And finally, as schools reopen in Spain, how will the coronavirus affect the younger students? Going back to the front pages, just to see what the headline writers have been up to in the UK. The Metro, Adele's hairdo, by the way, is sparking a fuss because she's had it done in, well, obviously having no hair, I've got no idea, but it looks like little, she's got little pine kernels on her head, and apparently it's been done as cultural appropriation. It was, of course, traditionally been Notting Hill Carnival Day yesterday. Anyway, she's getting flack because of that. Anyway, Metro, 3 months to catch up. That is the title of the Metro Daily Telegraph. Pupils to face exam delay next summer. Schools face huge tests to help pupils catch up. The Guardian, gap between rich and poor widens 46% in a year. And a picture of footballer Marcus Rashford. His new goal is to tackle UK food poverty. The Mirror, schools foot a £216 million bill to keep our kids safe. The Daily Star, school crackdown, cough and you are off. Pupils to be suspended for COVID jokes. And they've got a picture of a headmaster flexing a cane, which I can only assume that they've got from a stock library, because there can be no more sort of corporal punishments at schools. I wouldn't think so. Anyway, Daily Mirror, the diabetes revolution. NHS will launch soup and shake diet, and Adele at centre of storm over her African hairstyle. Financial Times, global stocks soar during hottest August for decades in markets. The Times, tourists in turmoil over quarantine restrictions. British Airways parent company today, who say you might as well have put a sign up outside the UK saying we are closed for business. The Daily Express, new BBC boss must save free TV licences. And a picture of Davina McCall. Davina, why I'm feeling foxy at 52. I'll tell you all about it. And those are your headlines, for better or worse, on the front pages of the papers, both in Spain and the UK. This Tuesday, the 1st of September.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Indeed, and the WhatsApps are already busy from the usual suspects. Should we say our usual suspects, our valued listeners? Good morning to Richard, who said, Morgan, why not just pay it? It's a tax, after all. This is going back, of course, to the TV licence fee debate. Yeah, I suppose. I mean, the chances apparently of being caught are very, very small indeed. There are only about sort of four vans with spinning roof racks going through the Great London area. But anyway, and also good morning to Julie, who says the candle that smells of Dagenham, and I'll be speaking with Alf Brewer a bit later on today, the candles that smell of Dagenham, perhaps they've got to be a little bit better than Gwyneth Paltrow's candle. Yes, let's not even go there. It's a little bit early in the morning.
This is TRE
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Giles Brown here, live from the studios of TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. Once again, if you want to get in touch with the show, the numbers are 952-78-4000. Studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official, and you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. Right then, it is to the lines we go, and joined live on the line once again by our usual intrepid Spanish correspondent, Andres Gallardo. Andres, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Giles. Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Okay, schools are going back to, pupils are going back to school throughout, both in the UK and also in Spain. And there's been further developments with the cases seemingly mount in Spain.
Yeah, there's two main items that is being discussed now in Spain. One, obviously, going back to school, there was some confusion between the guidelines from central government, the regional governments, and so on. It appears now that the guidelines are set and the schools now are getting ready to open very soon. Now, the guidelines that they've come out, I don't know what you think, but I mean, they are talking about the social distancing, the 2 meters, segregating kids into bubbles in groups. They're talking about wearing masks for 6-7 hours of the day. They're talking about entering the school and exiting the school in groups and so on. How long will that last, Giles? It's going to be maybe the first day everyone will adhere to that. But as weeks go by, you know, things will relax and kids will interact as they normally do. And all these guidelines are going to be by the by. There is an additional problem that hasn't been dealt with by the Ministry of Labour Minister, it is that they are saying that when COVID cases are detected in schools, these bubbles of children will have to quarantine, which means that they'll have to go home for 2 weeks, and adding the additional pressure to the parents to have to be with them, so they won't be able to go to work. And how are they going to be compensated financially for not being able to go to work because they have to look after the kids? And that, there's no decision made on that. I guess I'll have to do something because obviously parents can't go to work. Who's going to pay the wages? So that's the debate that has been happening this week. We'll have to wait and see. I expect that the first day we'll see ministers and politicians having pictures taken in very well organised schools, just to put a little bit of spin to the opening of the academic year. But after that, it's going to be. I just can't see children. If adults here in Spain haven't been able to socially distance and going to parties and all of that, do you think little children are going to be able to manage all these new rules? I don't think so. I might be wrong, but I don't think that happens.
Yeah, I mean, this is the whole thing. I mean, if anybody's got an experience of a primary school, it seems to be especially sort of a public primary school down only in Andalusia, perhaps, but it seems to be a case of sort of great crowd control at the best of times. So how are you going to stop a bunch of 5-year-olds and a 4-year and 3-year-olds all hugging each other? I shudder to think.
Well, they've organised the school grounds. They've put, like, red tape where the groups can stand. And so different groups will stand in their little bit, so they won't be able to mix with the other bit of the school ground where maybe their friends are. There's no barriers. There's only a little bit of red tape on the floor. Do you think the kids are not going to cross the red tape and mix with their friends, maybe neighbours or kids they were with last year or whatever? All these things, I mean, there's a lot of spin on it, and I think the reality of it is that once the schools open and after the first week where everyone will try, you know, teachers and so on to try to, they'll see that there's no control over it and everything will go back to normal. With the consequence that obviously COVID seems to be growing and growing in Spain, and some kids will have to quarantine, causing another problem. So one thing they have said is that they're not going to close whole schools. They're only going to sort of quarantine the what they call bubbles of children. I'm translating from Spanish.
Yeah, sure. And I understand what you mean, but yeah, just thinking of, you know, quarantining individual sort of little gangs of kids.
Yeah, as opposed to closing the whole school. Now, how's that going to work? We'll have to wait and see. It might work fantastically well and children behave better than adults. So for all we know, that could be the case. But I personally don't think that that is going to happen as the guidelines are intended. So that's something that we'll see in the coming weeks and see how many schools have to send children back home to quarantine and how they deal with the parents having to look after the kids at home, not being able to get out. I feel sorry for the kids because they've already been locked locked down 3 months at home.
Yeah.
That's bad enough. So if they go to school and suddenly they have to just go back to being quarantined, it's going to be devastating for the kids and the parents.
Getting away from schools, though, let's have a look at the overall picture, because...
The other big subject here, which is happening this week, is the budget. The budget has to be approved by Parliament, as you know, this particular budget is a very important one for this year, because it's going to manage the 140... How much was it? I lost count. 140,000 million coming from the EU. This is very important. And the problem is that you've got two parties in power, the Socialist Party and Podemos. Podemos don't agree with their own government budget, and that's causing a problem within the government. The Socialist Party has to go and find votes in Parliament from other parties. The Catalan separatists have already said that they're not going to vote in favour of them because of the old traca-traca of the independence. They're going to have to go to the centre, the centre-right party of Ciudadanos to get those votes, to get it through. I'm personally not too worried about the budget, because the budget is going to be done by the finance minister, the technocrat that has been working in Europe for many years. And I'm not worried, because the EU has to approve the budget, because we're going to spend their money in essence, and they're going to have looking at Spain with a microscope, especially countries like Holland and Denmark, where they were originally against all these loans sent to countries like Spain and Italy and so on. So there's a lot of debate in Spain about the budget, who's going to vote for it and who doesn't. But the reality of it is Brussels will dictate what the budget will be.
And what do you think the reaction's going to be, you know, from, I mean, obviously, as you said, a question coming in said, who's going to financially compensate those if we have to have children off school because of COVID? I mean, that's going to be one of the big stumbling blocks, surely, yeah?
The children's school, and who's going to compensate the parents, there's no decision being made. The lack of planning in vision and other matters is evident. They're going to have to come out with something because families won't be able to afford having the situation again with the children at home. So I guess in the coming weeks they'll come out with something. It won't be much.
And I mean, what are the latest? What's the latest from coming out of the Madrid? It's been called a second wave. I said in the New York Times ran a story the other day saying, you know, here it comes, the second wave. Do you think that we are? Well, I mean, we're not heading to lockdown, but you think can you see more restrictions coming in over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think the figures don't look good. I mean, they don't like calling it a second wave. The government says, no, it's not a second wave. It just spikes here and there. It is a second wave. I mean, look at the numbers, you know. They're ridiculous. The pressure in hospitals in Madrid, it went from 5% to 16% in 10 days. 16% is a lot of pressure in a hospital, because don't forget that there are other diseases apart from COVID. So they need to be... providing a health service to all the patients, not only the COVID ones.
Mm.
So that pressure is what is going to determine whether we have more stringent measures coming in the coming weeks. But the reality is that, I've just heard on the radio this morning, for instance, just to give you an example, the main hospital in Marbella has got only 3 available ICU beds when there was 1 person with COVID on ICU. There are 15 now, and there's only 3 beds left to attend, you know, other people who may need that service. And so with the positive cases, the pressure in hospitals is starting to be more noticeable. Of course, we're not at the levels of March and April, I guess the treatments are perhaps a little bit better and they're managing the situation a bit better. But nevertheless, we're going to be under pressure if we don't control the situation.
I mean, Fernando Simón yesterday, who is the director of the coordination centre, which we've grown used to seeing, said that this population shouldn't be distressed, but we should be concerned.
That's the message that they're sending. Yes, the message now is just that we have to be concerned, but they're trying not to send a message of panic. I have to say the media doesn't help because the reporting of COVID is almost unbearable now. The other evening I watched Sky News at 8 o'clock and Antena 3 at 9 o'clock. In Sky News you had a range of news, including COVID, but there was a range of news and you could sort of focus on different things. If you watch the Antena 3 news at 9 o'clock, from 9 till 10, all they talk about is COVID, COVID, COVID. And people are getting like really stressed about it. And some people are starting to say, well, I'm not watching it anymore because it's stressing me out so much that I want to ignore what's happening in the news. And there is an increasing concern from the population that is too much, you know. So they're trying to send a message a little bit balanced on to say, look, we have to take this seriously, but let's not panic and so on. So, and that's why Fernando Simón was saying what he was saying yesterday.
So what are we going to be looking forward to? Because obviously Spain has gone back to quote-unquote, you know, it's the first day of September. You know, the holidays are over. The Madrileños have gone back. If they've been holidaying on the coast, etc. You know, Madrid is going to start functioning. Barcelona start functioning with the return of people from various destinations. I mean, it's only to be expected, I think, that we see another rise. I mean, it's just over 29,000 fatalities now, after 83 in the past 7 days, 83 fatalities in the past 7 days. So perhaps we're going to see, again, a rise in numbers as people go back to their work environments and people go back to schools. It's going to be a very, very sort of tricky 7 days, isn't it, for the Prime Minister?
Yes, I hope you're wrong, but I mean, the reality is that people are going back to work, the holidays are finished. The schools are reopening, and we're going to see a rise in cases. Let's hope it's not the case, but the reality tells us that it will be the case. What measures can they impose without the state of alarm that they are effective? Because at the moment, look, we've had one of the hardest lockdowns in the world in Spain with the 3 months that we were all locked in our houses. We have got the most stringent rules on wearing masks and so on. But at the same time, we're the country that has got more cases and growing the fastest on these. There's something wrong here. it's certainly not working. So what can we all do? I'm not expecting the government to be able to do anything. As you know, I have very little faith in this particular government. It's got to be us who, by changing our lifestyle, be able to manage the virus.
Andrew,
the people.
Andres, as always, good to hear from you. Have a good week. Stay
Thank
safe.
Thank you very much. Let me just congratulate you because I saw the article in El País about your radio station and your program in particular was very good. Even you look good in the picture as well.
I know it's amazing what they can do with Photoshop. Thank you very much. And if you want to see, thank you, Andres. And if you want to see that article, it's available on El País in English as well as the website there. Andres Gallardo, as always, thank you for your time
thank
today.
Thank you, Giles. Thank you.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. If you want to get involved with Viewpoint, here are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And the time is 26 minutes to the top of the hour. Delighted to be joining me live on Viewpoint for the very first time, Andy Hurrell. Andy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles. Good to talk with you again.
Good to have you with us, of course. Now, other listeners may remember you from some points that you made on I Think You Think, of course, of a Wednesday evening, which we'll be returning at some point in the next couple of weeks. Andy, you want to... you wanted to make a couple of points about where we are, though, at the moment with regard to your viewpoints.
Yeah, I just want to say how delighted I am about Talk Radio Europe in general, because it's one of the last truly independent and uncensored platforms that can allow free speech and reporting without the shackles of the mainstream media imposing on the reporting that you get from, you know, the TV and Facebook and YouTube and so forth. So well done, you guys, for a fantastic service to the community. I want to just say that. But yeah, we spoke before about fear and the anxiety that's been caused by the media coverage of COVID-19, and your previous speaker alluded to that as well, and the terrible effect it's had on the lives of ordinary people who a year ago could never have believed what we're all going to have to endure since January. So to get to the point of all this, which is what we're going to try and help your faithful listeners to rationalise in their minds, what the real threat from COVID-19 is and where it stands in the list of problems that we should all be worried about. The facts, as of yesterday evening when I did the stats from the World Health Organization, were that 852,000 people have died globally from COVID-19. We know this is, you know, kind of debatable, because COVID is often encouraged for doctors to be written on the death certificate, even and though many doctors have alluded to this on different sites, where the actual cause may always have been slightly different. But this is to get the numbers up to make it look more impressive than it really is. Because if we look at the global picture, 852,000 COVID deaths this year compared to 326,000 flu deaths this year. And we haven't even got to the flu season yet. So before March, when COVID took hold, even if we assume that there was no COVID deaths were actually flu-related, you're about twice as likely to die from COVID than from COVID than you are from the flu. And people don't normally, on a day-to-day basis, over the last few years, I don't know anyone that's been worried about dying from the flu.
Right.
Okay, so, and if you think that's bad, let's put it into perspective. Look, pretend you're on I Want to Be a Millionaire. So, you've got four questions. I'm going to ask you four questions, right? Now, let me just get rid of this for a minute. Four questions, no, five. Right, according to the official World Health Organization metering statistics site, globally, which of these diseases is the biggest single cause of death this year? Your choices are as follows. A, COVID-19. B, malaria. C, road truck accidents. D, suicide. Or E, HIV and AIDS. Which one do you think causes the most amount of death?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot here. Okay.
That's what I want to do. I want to get your gut reaction.
Right, okay. Well, I'll go with C, whatever that was.
You'll go with C. C was traffic accidents.
Yeah, we'll do that one, okay.
With C, you traffic accidents are in second place, right?
Yeah.
Second highest, with 901,000 deaths from traffic accidents. But the outright winner is death caused by HIV and AIDS,
right,
which is 2,123,471. Now, that means that the COVID-19, which is absolutely being forced through every media outlet possible, 24 hours a day, doesn't even get into the top two in those particular scenarios. So with 85,000 deaths. And when you look at suicide, 716,000.
Yeah.
And
we've got a caller, and I'm going to bring a caller in, Andrew, just a second. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Cotsblanca.
Morning, Kate.
And first blast at Andrew's... I think the word would be scepticism about COVID-19. The thing that he's missing, most people with flu, for example, don't have it heavily and it doesn't affect them for life. I've been noticing that the most of the reports about COVID-19 don't go into the details of the long-term effects because there haven't been long-term effects. But the medical profession is picking up very nasty long-term effects on internal organs. If I'd known that Andrew was going to say what he'd done, I'd looked it up before, but this is just a quick one-off. He's, you know, starting from a sceptical position, he can see holes in anything. The real problem is the long-term effects on the...
But we haven't had long-term, so we don't know what they are, do we, Kate? So that's, that's...
Sorry, there have been some reports of people who are called the long stayers, or something like that,
right.
For some of them, the long-term, in injuries to their internal organs,
yep.
Especially the things to do with breathing.
Respiratory, perhaps.
Yes.
Right. Okay. More coffee needed, Kate.
Cheers. I think you're right there.
Thank you very much, Anita, Kate, for those calls in. So long-term, Andrew, I don't know if you caught any of that, but long-term health implications of...
There's something I was coming to. Kate's absolutely right, of course. Those people that are not asymptomatic, and there's about 20% of COVID cases that either get very ill or end up being hospitalised, about 20% of those, some of them go on to have long-term issues as a result of the infection. Now, it's the same with flu, of course. Most people have flu and get over it in a week or so. But some of those people get bronchial conditions and bronchitis, and some go on to get pneumonia and can have long-term conditions from that. So Kate's absolutely right to highlight that issue. But the kicker... Yeah, we're all running around complying with the new regulations. We're wearing our masks. We're socially distancing. We're washing our hands every 30 minutes. We've stopped going out. As a result of the lockdown, we've had massive financial hardship. People are going bust. Flight operators are on their knees. All this to try and control an epidemic that's less likely to kill you than when you're driving your car. No one's ever said we want to cut back on our driving to reduce the risk of death over the last 8 months, and especially since there's fewer cars on the road anyway. But the big elephant in the room is not COVID-19. The big elephant in the room is cancer, diabetes, heart disease. Now, people are doing everything they possibly can to try and limit the effect of COVID-19 if it if they get an infection.
Yeah.
But the real elephant in the room is these other three problems, all of which are preventable through diet and lifestyle changes. So, by cleaning up toxicity and making sure you have decent food and so forth, we can get onto that on another day.
Indeed. I've got another call coming in, Andrew, just a second. Morning call, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yes, good morning, Sharon Alicante.
Morning, Sharon.
To echo everything Kate said, absolutely right. And there's even rumour that Johnson isn't feeling well, and there's a vague possibility he might die after Christmas. I don't know. I've no facts on this at all. But people are having to leave their workplaces, which is another economic problem. Regarding the flu, I think you'll find it's the people who have residual effects from the flu are people who are vulnerable in the first place, so they get a worse dose of the flu. I haven't certainly turned into an expert for anybody who might want to call in and criticise me for pretending to be an expert, because I'm not. Well, I glean my information from epidemiologists that I hear from all over the place, qualified out there epidemiologists.
Yeah.
But it's you're normally people who are vulnerable in the first place, who pick up a higher viral load of the flu, who end up with residual problems, symptoms. with AIDS, yeah, it's absolute emergency. They still haven't found a vaccine for AIDS, and it's topped the list. So maybe we should be looking for a vaccine. Maybe we should need that vaccine. But with AIDS, you can, to a degree, we kind of know how to avoid getting it, but it's not quite that simple. So this, with this disease, with COVID, it's very, very, very difficult to know what to do to avoid getting it. So I would pick up on one or two weak points in your guest's arguments.
Thank you for your call in there, Sharon. Andrew.
Yeah, well, Sharon's absolutely right as well. So we've had two callers, both of which are absolutely right, and they're on the money. And the point that I was trying to make is that the we've got two areas of medicine, which is mainstream medicine, which is trauma care, and we've got disease management. And I've used the words very carefully because I believe the first aspect, trauma care, is second to none. The work that these guys do is outstanding in every possible way. But that brings us on to disease management. The reality is that nearly all prescription drugs can allow patients to continue their lives and manage their symptoms without ever really being able to rid themselves of whatever caused the problem. And how many times do you hear, you know, they've had chemo and radiation, cured someone with cancer, 6 years later, but down the line they get the problem come back and it's metastasized and the end is they're more of a reality for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was given the all-clear from my own prostate cancer after I had radiation seeds put in. And then 2 years later, it came back with a vengeance. And why was this? You know, so they never actually addressed the root cause of the problem. Surgical intervention, brilliant though this may be, does not necessarily get to that root cause. Just to highlight the problem with drugs. In 2010, the Journal of General Internal Medicine said an estimated 450,000 preventable medication-related deaths occurred in the US in 2010, and that's gone up every single year since then. And we have to be aware that the drugs that we take every day to manage a symptom of a problem are more likely not going to cure you from and the long-term use can have profound effects on liver and kidney function. So we've got to be careful about the way that we medicate ourselves, and that can compromise our ability to fight off these infections.
Got another caller on the line, Andrew. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Charles. Good morning, Andrew. It's Peter.
Morning, Peter.
Morning. Perfect segue there, because autoimmune problems. This is HIV is an autoimmune problem, and the trouble is with an autoimmunity is when the body turns around and it's attacking itself. So the previous caller was saying about long-term effects. You don't get much more long-term than HIV. I mean, your body's attacking itself all the time. Now, with autoimmunity, the problem is if you go on, there's a site called PubMed.gov, which is it's in America. And if you were to put in vaccine-induced autoimmunity, over 2,385 papers come up on that subject alone. So these are all proper scientific papers, all cited and everything. So the world, or the medical world, is now aware of the problems we have with vaccination. In America now, children are being vaccinated 80 times. Again, vaccinated for 80 different things. I think in the UK now, we're up to, is it 13 or 16? They've got the 6-in-1, various others. And then you go on to a secondary list if you're susceptible to certain things, or a parent was born in a country that was susceptible to TB and things like that. So the list goes on and on and on. Now, there is diabetes 1 and 2, as everybody knows. One is an autoimmune system, and diabetes type 2 is a lifestyle thing. Now, there is a thing called diabetes 1.5, which is the 2. Now, children, younger and younger children, are now developing the both of them, which means that not only is it destroying the beta cells in their pancreas, where they can't produce insulin, but there is insulin resistance, so that their receptors are not accepting the insulin. So they've got both, which is terrible. Now, this has only happened since we've upped the vaccinations, and there is a paper out there. You can download the PDF. I don't have it right in front of me, but it's a very long-winded title. But the problem we have now is we're injecting people all the time, which creates an inflammatory response from the autoimmune system, which then the cortisone has to then deal with that. It can't deal with it all, so the inflammatory response stays there. And now there is scientific evidence that the constant vaccinations are destroying us as human beings. We have metabolic syndrome completely all the time, being inflamed. We have been diagnosed with things that they don't even know. They just put it down to something they're unsure about, and it's normally inflammation. It's normally an autoimmune problem. Now, there's many, many autoimmune problems out there, and many, many people will be sitting there listening to this radio thinking, oh, well, I have an autoimmune disease. But think back the amount of inoculations we've been having. And it causes this. And possibly not every single one, but there is scientific evidence with thousands of papers out there now saying what the problem is. And I'd like to know what you think about that, Andrew, because you probably come across it anyway.
Yeah. Is that Peter?
Yes.
Yeah, Peter's absolutely right. Peter's been watching probably the same media that I've been watching. I watched a film about a week ago. It's the new pandemic film, Pandemic 2. It's called Indoctrination.
I've not seen
it. This is the whistleblower, Judy Mikovits.
I've heard of it. Yeah, I've followed her such stuff, yeah.
She discusses the very plain corruption that's been going on within the vaccine industry for the last 25 years. Particularly since Dr. Fauci was involved in the particular industry and the work was done on some of the vaccines that have been done over the last 25 years. And she was the whistleblower because there's elements within the vaccine that are designed specifically to do two very important jobs. One is to reduce population, not necessarily through illness and disease, which it does very well, but also through less fertility ability.
Sorry to interrupt, Andrew. I don't buy into that reducing the population thing. And the trouble is, we all get labelled now as conspiracy theorists with this. But if you read the papers and you check the scientific papers, that there is no getting away from it. You don't need to point fingers at blames and pharmaceutical industries. I've been all over that and I believe all that. But the scientific papers, like I said, autoimmunity now, the scientific papers are out there. The evidence is there. It is overwhelming, absolutely overwhelming, that the continued vaccination and injections of human beings, younger and younger, more and more, is setting us up for long-term sickness and illness. And then the medical, as you just said, there's two types of medicine. The industry now is all about servicing that sickness of people, which is disgusting. I mean, if you think back to Christopher Reeve when he broke his neck, said if they spent as much money on getting me to walk again instead of treating me as a paraplegic, and it's the same for everything else. You just need the insurance companies, just the whole big industry, just put the money into research and development and stop just treating us, making us sick and treating us as sick. And it creates a sick world. So I'll let you get on, Andrew, if you'll call. Thank you,
Thanks for that, Peter. Good to hear from you, Andrew. Let me just, if people want to get in contact with the show.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And Gio comes in on the WhatsApp saying, your guest is spot on. COVID-19 is insignificant compared to other diseases. No excess deaths in Spain for the first 6 months of 2020. In fact, no excess deaths in Spain 2020 till 20th of August. If deaths carry on at current rates, we will have 65,000 deaths, less than the average for the past 5 years. The other way, excuse me, otherwise, other comments in on the WhatsApp. Ian, oh dear, mankind is heading back into the dark ages. Okay, well, that's a smiley little point there. And The excess deaths, thousands, however, from, I'm not sure where you get the graph from, Richard, but you've got 50,000, over 50,000 excess deaths in the UK, spot on 50,000 excess deaths in Spain. Andrew, over to you. We're into the last 5 minutes of the first half of the show.
Because when you look at Sweden, they have done virtually nothing to combat this disease. They've had a death rate of 574 people per million of the population compared to the UK, which is 611 per million. So despite the fact that they're not really using masks, they've just been made to be alert of the situation. They try and keep a little bit of distance, but they've not shut any businesses or anything.
I mean, talking about businesses, and you talked about fear, you know, at the beginning of when you started talking. I mean, schools are going back this week. If you were a parent, should you be more fearful, in your opinion and your viewpoint?
I wouldn't be the slightest bothered about them going back to school. I mean, we know that as far as the children are concerned, it's very, very unlikely, given the fact that they've got a strong immune response to this, that they'll be affected. And if they're asymptomatic and they do get it, which they may be, they're certainly not going to be ill for more than a day or so. But the obviously the problem for the parents is not so much the children getting sick, but passing it on to the parents and grandparents. So that is a concern, which is where, when I spoke to you last time, what I think you think, the cure for COVID-19, which is this chlorine dioxide, which no one's talking about because it's been censored out of all the media, which works in about 12 to 14 hours and is used in hospital blood bags to purify the blood before transfusion. You get it in every single water bottle you buy from the shop because it's made to make sure that the water is purified. It's also used in municipal water systems in four main countries in Europe now instead of chlorine, which is far, far safer. Chlorine dioxide in the right dose will knock out any infection like COVID-19. So if you get armed with a bottle of that, then you should be in good shape in the event that any of your sons or daughters do come home with an infection, and you can start them on that and take it for yourself. It's got no side effects if you do it in the way. I'll give out my email address at the end, and I'll send it. I'm not advocating anything. I'm not a doctor. I don't advocate anyone do anything they don't want to do. But I can tell you from experience, my partner had a very bad case of, we don't know what it was because she wasn't tested, but she had all the symptoms, lost her sense of taste, the sense of smell, a very bad headache. Within 12 hours of taking chlorine dioxide, she was absolutely fine.
Getting it live to the lines. Morning, Cooley. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello. I can't really hear your guest very well, Giles. It's the sound isn't great. But from what he's just said, does he have any medical qualifications? Because he's just given out some advice that is possibly not dangerous, but certainly isn't helpful. And I'm just worried that when a lot of these things go out there, especially on the internet and social media, you're leading people up the wrong path and possibly giving people hope where there may not be any if they catch it.
This is why I want to give people out my email address, because I can send you all the scientific data and all the literature and all the research that's been done which proves that chlorine dioxide does actually work.
So, the trouble is that, you know, people keep saying, oh, there's the research, it's out there. And you never give references.
Yeah, well,
sorry?
I can give them to you now.
Okay, I've got a pen in my hand.
Right, let me just go to the trouble is with all these links, they're very, very long links, and it's all, I think Peter was talking about them earlier.
We're coming into the last minute of the show, Andrew, so why don't you just give out your email then if you want people to contact you in that
okay,
one.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's Andrew Hurrell 2000, that's HURRELL 2000 at yahoo.com.
And one more time, please, Andrew.
And that's Andrew Hurrell 2000 at yahoo.com.
Andrew, it's been great to have you on the show for the first time. But thanks for your viewpoints. Got people talking at the very least. We look forward to welcoming you back on the show in the not too distant future. Andrew Hurrell, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks very much, John. Bye.
952-78-4000 is the phone number.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Right then, coming up to the end of the first half of Viewpoint, national international news up next, and then we're back with Alf Brewer after the news.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment. Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Oh, there we go. Those indeed are the numbers. Giles Brown here, live from the studios of TRE Talk Radio, your voice in Spain. Trying to get hold of Alf Brewer. I'll be with him in a second. But in the meantime, let's go back to some of the notes that we've had in so far. Coming back about the situation in terms of fatalities. Richard in London came back with a reply that the total excess deaths in thousands graph came from the Financial Times. He's also sent me a graph pointing out the new deaths attributed to COVID-19 in the United Kingdom, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and Finland. And I can't actually, I'm just actually seeing, trying to work out what, yeah, I was always bad at graphs. That's half the reason I ended up doing English. Looking at that, 952-78-4000 is the phone number, going live to the lines. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Sorry to bother you. I didn't quite catch the surname of the gentleman that was leaving his...
Hurrell. H-U-R-R-E-L.
One L. Oh, OK, that's fine. And yeah. Is John Harper coming back tomorrow?
No, he's not coming back tomorrow. There's the programme isn't slated to be beginning until later on in the year, OK?
Oh, sooner the better, please.
Thank you very much for your call in. Morning call, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, Giles. It's Bertha here from Computer.
Yes, Bertha. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I just would like to say I support Peter, who called in earlier. His approach was very balanced and it was based on solid research. I agree with Peter that to suggest that there's some depopulation going on... or reduction of population connected with vaccines is a red herring and detracts from a very serious subject, and one should keep to facts and solid research. And if people are in doubt about vaccine safety, I would suggest they go and follow Robert Kennedy Jr., who has been a pioneer in exposing some of the dangers of vaccines, along with medical experts who are of the same mindset. That's really what I want to say.
Thank you very much.
And also, and just very quickly, I was a victim of the flu virus 1957-58, and we lost over 1 million people in Britain. During that, I think it was a 12-month period. There was no pandemic called. It was not It was not called a pandemic. And I think that there's been a... It's rather sinister that there's been complete silence on that happening in Britain. I find that what's going on with this coronavirus... there's so much fear being driven by the media. I'm not suggesting that the illness is not serious. I lost my hearing from that virus in 1957.
Right.
I lost a good part of my hearing, and I certainly wouldn't undermine the seriousness of any COVID flu virus. But what is being done to society on the back of COVID-19, I'm finding very disturbing. Very disturbing indeed.
Thank you so much for your call in. Some points, interesting points, well made as always. 952 78 4000. If you want to get in touch, I'll give you this one more time before we go live to Alf.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
I had a couple of calls in, by the way. The contact name is for Andrew Hurrell, because you want to see some of his points. He said he would email them to you. So if you want to get in touch with Andrew Hurrell, and I'll give out the number or the email again, it's Andrew Hurrell, two R's and two L's. Sorry, my apologies. Andrew Hurrell, two R's, two L's, 2000 at yahoo.com. Thank you, Richard, for your alternative email address. Going live to the lines, delighted to be joined live on the line by Alf. Alf, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles.
Good to have you with us. Just before we get started into the nitty-gritty of everything, did you see this thing about this perfume or this candle that you light?
Not perfume.
It's a candle.
Not perfume. Well, I think Dagenham never had perfume.
Eau de Cologne. I can see Tom Ford and Yves Saint Laurent people
Eau
being...
Eau de Rivoli. That's what Dagenham had. Eau de Rivoli.
Eau de Rivoli.
Yeah.
A red brick and what was the other thing? Nettles.
I have no idea, but I can honestly tell you, I would never... Why would I... I lived too close to it. I tell you what we used to have. We used to have the abattoir. That was a good perfume when the cloud was there. Or the petrochemical plant. Or Beckton Gasworks before they knocked it down and made a film out of it.
Oh, yeah. Full metal jacket, that was.
I tell you what, Northern Outfall. That was all the sewage from North London dumped in the Thames.
If any perfumiers are listening in, by the way, then Alf and I have got an absolute killer. Anyway. Yeah, I used to live in Campios, and if the wind blows the long way, that there are quite a few pig farms there. So Cologne de Campios would be an absolute bestseller.
Yeah. Well, in the middle of what is now Beckton, used to be Custom House, was the abattoir. Well, on a cloudy day, when they were melting the bones, boy.
Takes you back. Right then, apologies to all our vegan and vegetarian listeners. Alf, good to have you with us once again. Schools go back. The pandemic seems to be going for a second wave, if the mainstream media is to be believed in Spain and in the UK. What's your viewpoint on it, Alf?
Right. Schools going back, because I was listening earlier, and... some of the schools have already gone back, and this is what people don't understand. So there's already some learning lessons coming from this, which is why both the Spanish government and the UK governments, I'll say collectively because it's four different countries, all giving four different sets of information, they're making it up as they go along because they don't know how to handle it. So I can tell you from experience... You can go to one school and they're saying you've got to wear masks all day long, the kids included, in class. Other schools are saying they don't have to wear masks in the classroom. Other schools are now offering, which is not what the Spanish government have said, you can have a choice as a parent whether you still have your child taught online. It is just mayhem out there. Now, you know, I've got three daughters who are all teaching in schools, and... everything is different every day. Every day they change the rules. All this spacing stuff that's going on. You know, some of the private schools haven't got the room for the spacing. So what's not happening is that the Spanish schools haven't gone back yet. So if they're not picking up on what's going on, what the private schools are suffering from, you know, this mixed messages, changing the rules, no direct direction, you know, then it will be a mess.
Mm.
Also, on top of that, the message that we certainly receive back through our contacts is the number of parents for kids going to Spanish schools who are petitioning that the kids don't go back to school. massive, certainly massive around Benalmadena, Fuengirola, Torremolinos, all this end. It's huge. I think they've got two going in Marbella as well. So there's a whole pile of stuff that's going on. But the reality is, everything's got to go back to something. I did listen, and I listened with glee to all these people, you know, and Andy Cole, flu versus COVID. Well, you know, it's subtly different. You know, there's no choice with this COVID. Because they know so little about it, you don't know where you're catching the infection, how you're catching the infection, how it's passed on. Nobody really knows that. At least with flu, you have half an idea, and at least with flu, you can have your flu jab and all the... Not that I have...
Got a caller on the line. Yeah, I just want to say this for caller. Good morning, caller. Thank you for holding alive on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning. It's Sweco Bert here in Finca. Look, there's so many things going on at the moment, and I think many listeners are a little bit fed up with all this hypochondriac talk, and there's so many other things. Just a few weeks ago, Sweden had a very, very big maneuver, a drill in the Baltic, and now they're starting all the Nordic countries together with the United States, with their Air Force, and it's Army, Navy, and Air Force involved. And it's an awful lot of people involved in the Baltic and on Gotland. And there's similar things going on in Poland. Then in the eastern Mediterranean is a lot of things going on. And in old Libya. So surely there are other things to talk about than virus. We have a tourist department here in the Finca. There was a family here from Madrid. They booked in for 3 weeks, okay? Yes. When there was 10 days left, the husband, he said, oh, I have all the symptoms. And he telephoned the doctor in Madrid. And Madrid said, oh, you must come straight away. We will take all the tests on you here in Madrid. Okay, so in the morning they came up to us and my wife and I and said, oh, I'm sorry, we must go because I think I got the virus and so forth. So they took off and left 10 beautiful days behind, all paid for. And then they came up to Madrid and went to the doctor and took all the tests. And nothing wrong with him and he felt very well. I mean, ridiculous.
Okay, well, thank you for your call in. Good to have you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Slamming the kitchen table as well. 952-78-4000, Alf.
Well, one of the reasons why we don't talk about some of the stuff is that we know very little about, and I presume what's going on in the Baltic is a NATO exercise.
I think so.
If it's the Americans and the Scandinavian countries, no doubt there's some British troops there and some others. Yeah, and we know little about it, and we certainly can't influence it. All we say is, you know, hopefully they're keeping us safe, and that's what they're doing their job for. So, and there are other issues. I still believe, you know, they keep on raising these other issues in order to get away from the subject. You know, they had this immigration 3 weeks ago. It was all about immigration, all these people going, you know, between France and whatever. And then people come on the line and they talk as if, you know, what, we should send them back to their country. We should stop them coming into the country. We should do this. We should do... And none of these people actually ever listen or ever understand. And I think, you know, Pompey Gary said, history is only written by the victors. There's a lot more to history than conflict. It's not about the victors. These people, we know they're all economic asylum seekers. We know that. We know that they don't, you know, the rules don't apply to them. You know, but we fought a Second World War, and part of the peace process after the Second World War, to try to avoid these things, at the time, remember, Africa was an unforgotten place, but they made this justice court, you know, the World Justice Court, that actually says any human being on the planet has the right to seek asylum in the country of their choice, not... Oh, you've got to stop them at the French border to stop them coming into Britain because they're not entitled to be in Britain. And Britain aren't paying the French to stop the people going across the channel. They're paying the French to process them in France to say whether they can or can't be asylum seekers. It's not about us paying the French to create a border. We've got a border. It's called the North Sea.
English called, Channel, I think you call it. North Sea stops the Vikings from coming over, Al.
Well, yeah, but they're still coming across from Holland.
Yes, okay.
That's the North Sea. Anyway, I'm not pretending. There's
I know.
Right. Loads of places. Wherever they can get in, they'll try and get in. But what we don't do, and what people need to understand, I dealt with the industry of people who were dealing with not illegal immigrants, asylum seekers, many of whom weren't entitled to be in the country. But you tell a person from a village in Chad who has got no documentation, there is no birth certificate, there is no nothing in Chad that you could, or you've got to go back and survive in Chad. So we'll put you on an aeroplane and fly back. We'll dump you in Chad somewhere and we'll let them get on with you. The chances are that person will die within months. So, you know, as human beings, you try to avoid that. And people knocked it. We used to pay, or they still pay, for legal advice. For anybody seeking asylum in the UK, it's a small team, actually. It's about four or five people, mainly one lead solicitor. And they go through all the paperwork with them to make sure that the UK know whether this person... Yeah, and it's not just about coming from a war zone. It is being threatened with death. If we send that person back to that country, they're likely to die. Which, you know, Emma Hamzid, you know, the geezer with no hands. Okay. Yeah, you know, we'll send him back to Egypt.
Well, I mean, Chowdhury, you mean? Oh, no, huh? Yes. Andrew Hamzid, yeah, of course.
Yeah, send him back to Egypt. So, what? The guy would be killed within a week of him landing. It was a good job the Americans said we want him deported to America so we can put him on trial, because he would have died in Egypt. That's why he wouldn't go back to Egypt. But, you know, nevertheless, we're human beings and we have to have some civility. You can't just say, send them home. Stop them coming across the channel. Oh, and what is it? The classic, the real classic. This is a minister in a Labour, in a... UK government will send a battleship out. What the bloody hell? All a battleship can do, all any of them, and they're not battleships anyway, they're cruisers or small frigates. All they can do is pick the people up off the boat and bring them back to England.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what? All they can do. They're not allowed to do anything else. So what is the point of a minister, a UK minister? It's like we're going to send out a British Navy to stop all this flotilla of dinghies. Yeah, what a load of nonsense. So they got off the subject. You haven't heard about it. You know, you hear it occasionally, or there's been a peak in a weekend when, you know, 17 rubber boats have landed in Britain. Another couple of hundred people have come in. Every day, every single day in the UK, people apply to come to the country because of previous asylum seekers who have been allowed to stay in the UK, who can then argue, well, we want to bring our relatives over because they're our dependents. Far, far more of them than there ever is people in rubber dinghies. Far more. And if you talk to people, talk to the Swedes. You want to see about how you mishandle immigration? The Swedes absolutely hate it when they had to take all the Syrians in. They took, was it 500,000 Syrians in about 2 months? Yeah, they hate it because there's nothing for the Syrians in Sweden. There's no work, there's no nothing. And so I just think, you know, they've got a big issue. And us leaving the European Union ain't going to stop people getting in rubber dinghies.
Going live to the lines again. Good morning, Cordy, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Cusblanca.
Yes, Kate.
For Alf. Alf, for your better information, I caught the tail end of a news item about a couple of days ago. It sounded as though Priti Patel had commissioned one of these planes to take illegal immigrants back to Spain because they had stopped off in Spain on the route from wherever it was that they started from, and that she was stopped. What have I missed?
I wonder why. It's called... because she's got no right to do that, and the Spanish have no obligation to take these people back either.
But the interesting thing about that one I saw was the fact that they referred to them as activist lawyers. Now, that opens up a whole new can of the proverbial, because if you start saying that lawyers are activists, you are politicising the legal system, surely?
No, I don't know. Well, they might have different names. In the UK, they were called Asylum Helper Legal Team. That's and they operated in the main, not singly, in an old army barracks in Cambridge.
Right.
So they had a whole network to help them to fill the papers in. A whole network, not just, you know, a couple of people. So, you know, and the law that applies is so rigid. You know, I'll say it again, anybody on the planet has the right to seek asylum in the country of their choice. It's down to the country that's, you know, whether they take them or not.
What are your thoughts as well about this? We had some rather disturbing images over the weekend of Britain First activists knocking on doors in hotels because people, asylum seekers, people who have come across the water have been being put up in. Now, they're referred to as five-star hotels, but I think the reality is a little bit different.
Yeah, four in a room, maybe. And no, it's because it was empty hotels. This is to stop, right? Illegal immigrants, and I mean the ones who are refused entry into the UK or disappear into... So they land on a beach and they disappear into the network and quite often they're not found. I'll tell you the people who find them. They're British companies who employ these people as cheap labour. Cleaners, you name it, rubbish clearers and all that. But of course, with the virus, they don't want people sleeping rough on the streets. So this is where they, you know, what was it they said in London? They were using Centre Point, weren't they? They were putting loads of people up in Centre Point to get them off the streets because of the virus.
Yeah, Centre Point was using it because I think that was Crisis, wasn't it? The homeless charity that are based, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they're based in there, but the rest of the place is still an old hotel that's not used.
Yeah.
They opened it up and put the homeless people in there. They could have done that 20 years ago, 30 years ago, but they just never did because it creates a different problem about encouraging people to make themselves homeless. And they're not homeless, they're street livers, aren't they? We all know that. It's not because they've been kicked out of their houses. Most of them choose to be there for whatever strange reasons
well,
they
you
have.
You could say that, but as the saying goes, Alf, we are only three missed paychecks away from being on the street ourselves.
Yeah. Oh, I understand that, and there is a difference between if... And of course, what's been damaged is sale of council houses. Not that they were sold, but they never used the money to replace and replenish council housing stocks. It sat in a bank account. It's still sat in a bank account, untouched. You know, it's not. The government will use it and abuse it for whatever reasons. But for sale of council house money never went back into providing affordable homes. So you're then relying on charities, you know, to provide affordable housing. What you get from that is someone who can't afford to pay their rent in a private landlord's house then gets ejected. Where do they go? You know, they go onto the streets. Well, the first port of call for many, many, many of them is the local town hall. What can you do for me? Where can I go? And, of course, the town halls in the old days, and I'm talking about long ago, they would put, I remember there was a bed and breakfast place in East Ham High Street, and that was notably used for people who had defaulted on payment.
Never saw that one on Airbnb. Right then, live to the lines, 952-78-4000. Morning call, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yes, good morning. I'm sorry, it's Sharon again.
Sharon.
It's just that, hello, good morning to Alf as well. Alf, I've got a question for you. If the migrants are allowed to choose the country of their choice, that's fantastic news, because I've always argued that the geographical position of Britain is never likely to be the first port of call for any migrant, so we therefore we would not by law be pushed into taking taking the migrants because of our geography. Where, could I ask you, I don't normally question your sources, but I would like to know where you got this from, that they can choose which country they go to, because if that's true, it's fantastic news. We don't have to take... they can choose to go to Britain, and Britain should take her fair share of migrants. I'll leave it with you and hang up.
Let's get this clear. We're not talking about legal asylum seekers. People who are in a war zone, people who can show quite clearly that their life is under threat. You know, people like the Syrians and why the EU had to take, I don't know how many days they're taking, 1.5 million Syrians, something like that, through Turkey and that. What it is, it's the international law on asylum seekers. So it's not about illegal immigrants, it's asylum seekers. And an asylum seeker has the choice of which country they want to seek asylum in. Doesn't matter how many countries... You know, somebody from Afghanistan has been, you know, two-thirds of the way around the world to get to a port in Calais or wherever they go in Calais to get on a rubber dinghy and come to the UK. So any one of those countries, you could argue, should have stopped them, should have sent them back, should have done this, should have done that. But they haven't over the years. You cannot stop these people, you know, getting into your country. So let's make it clear. They're asylum seekers. The difference is, if someone is seeking asylum into the United Kingdom, they have to meet the criteria for an asylum seeker. Most of these people do not meet the criteria, and therefore they're labelled illegal immigrants. But that's when they've got to the country. If you don't want to call them an illegal immigrant, and you want to call them an asylum seeker, you process them in France, because they're not seeking asylum in France, they're seeking asylum in the UK. France is just a stopping off point. So the British border, and it's the British Border Police, have these camps set up, and I'm not talking about the camps that these people live in, but they have their offices set up in France, organised and policed by the French police along with British Border Patrol police, and they process every individual. Now, at that point, nobody has ever explained somebody in France who's an asylum seeker for the UK gets processed in one of these centres and they're told, you don't apply. What happens to them? Well, we all know what happens to them. They leave whatever this office is. They go and find some of their mates up on the railway line or wherever, wait for the lorries, and then they try to get into the UK illegally. And that's when they become illegal immigrants. But the law, the international law, is quite clear. If you're in a war zone, or, you know, somewhere Biafra, or when the civil war was going on in some of the African countries, you had the right to seek asylum in the country of your choice, however many countries you travelled through, because you're not seeking asylum there. And that's where people get mixed up between asylum seekers and illegal immigrants. An illegal immigrant is someone who's been refused asylum. End of story
indeed. Looking at some of the comments coming in, and if you want to get involved with the show,
to contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000, email studio@tre.radio, send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95, message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Looking at some of the bits and pieces, somebody says Beckton still stinks, blimey. This one in, they only come to the UK for one reason, benefits. And Biafra, that ceased in 1970, I believe. So some comments coming in on that one. I want to go back, if I can, Alf, to this. There was a big demonstration in the middle of London this weekend, Saturday. People against the COVID lockdown. Some people like... David Icke were there. Corbyn's brother, is it Piers Corbyn, was making a speech as well, or was definitely there. Somebody raised an interesting point, which is the fact that, I mean, whether you are pro-mask, anti-vax, pro-vax, you know, lockdown, no lockdown, lizard people taking over the earth by Tuesday tea time, the thing is that we have, in the UK, we have lost, or the population in the UK has lost confidence in the government so much that the government could suggest that we do something, and we will just go. So many U-turns thus far. Boris Johnson seeming to be on the missing list, rumoured to be gone by Christmas. And I heard this morning on the radio somebody saying that this is a reactive government. It doesn't have a policy. It just, you know, belts something, and to use a cricket terminology, as I know that some of I've prone to do, it just sort of belts something to the boundary and hopes it'll stick. And if it doesn't stick, it just changes its attack. What are your thoughts?
So which idiot thinks that Boris Johnson is going to be ousted by somebody from the Tory party, because that's the only way it can happen, by Christmas? You know, he will be fighting the next general election. He's just changed the secretary of the cabinet and put in his geezery trusts, because they need to control what's going on because of Brexit. And whatever people think about Cummings, you have to understand the process. Right? I don't like the Tories. I hate the likes of Cummings and people like that, because they're in the background. They never put themselves up for election. You can't defeat them. The only people who can get rid of them is their mates, and they never will. So, you know, I detest them intensely, but Johnson has just stuck this guy in, 41 years of age, probably the youngest cabinet secretary in history, certainly in modern history, and they've put him in there for one reason. They're going to make sure the civil service toe the line on no-deal Brexit. It's as simple as that. And if people don't understand that's what they're planning, listen to what Cummings says. Well, don't. You can't listen to him, because he very, very rarely says it. You have to listen to what Johnson says, that Cummings has told him this is the direction we're going. What Cummings is not capable of doing is acting like a civil servant, because he's not a civil servant. He happens to be working in the civil service, technically, in the office of number 10. But the guy that they've just recruited to the cabinet secretary's position is a civil servant. He's been a civil servant almost his whole working life, and in some pretty senior places. This is a guy who knows how the civil service works and knows what buttons to push. So Johnson's just cleared out a pile of the old brigade, because they're not doing what his Tories want to happen, which is no-deal Brexit. They're getting in the way of it, I would assume. I mean, he sacked the last cabinet secretary, well, way back, didn't he? March, something like that, February.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, it's Ken here.
Morning, Ken.
I find it rather amusing how these people sort of, in Spain, the Brits, hide behind this phrase, "I'm an expat." Now, I don't know what expat means. If you've left the UK, take up residence in Spain, aren't you an immigrant?
Well, yeah, that's not that. We've had this one before. One person's immigrant is another person's expat. It just seems to be something which is almost a throwback to empire, Ken.
Yeah, but no... no.
It's not just the UK people that are called expats. Ask anybody from almost any, certainly any Northern European country, and they call themselves expats in Spain. Expatriates. I don't know what it means. Of course we're all immigrants.
Yeah, well, they're not patriotic, are they?
But the difference, I suppose the significant difference, Ken, is that there's an allowance in the EU for freedom of movement anywhere inside the EU. So
yeah.
Technically, we're not immigrants here. We're just EU citizens living in a part of the EU.
Well, come Brexit, that'll change.
Not for anybody who's already here, because there's too many guarantees gone. Unless they just wipe out. If there's no deal Brexit and Johnson says, right, all deals are off the table, which I very much doubt, there's enough legal evidence now that says the Spanish government are going to do this, the British government are going to do this, for ex-UK people who are living in Spain.
Yeah, I mean, I have heard that. I was delighted to hear it, because it was all going on in the background. They never made it too public, but as far as I know, Spain and the UK have got their own agreements.
Well, they've sort of, but they've all got to be endorsed by the European Union. Spain can't just do things off the back. Because, like, for instance, increases in your old age pension, if you're receiving an old age pension from the UK, you get an annual increase if you're in the UK. If you're in the EU, you've got an increase anywhere in the EU. So if you're a UK person in Germany, you've got your pension increase. And the same with the Spanish, etc., etc. It's all reciprocal arrangements. And they've protected that. What they haven't said is that may not apply for the future, because they haven't really decided the future until they've got today over with. So it may still apply for a while. My argument, if people listened to me, well, 3 years ago, my argument always was I came to Spain under terms and conditions that were set at the time, and if somebody changes those terms and conditions, I expect them to do something to honour it. That's what I spent my union life negotiating. If a company changed things, you always, your pension scheme, it was always those who've got hold, those who are new, well, you just have to accept the terms that are on offer. Not that we liked it, but it's like you accept the terms that are on offer. When people are falling over themselves to work for Tuppence Abney, there's not a lot you can do. I remember being a leading negotiator in British Telecom when they introduced redundancy that we called a job security agreement. We couldn't hold our members back. The offer was so good. Well, in the end, I took it and left as well. But that's for personal reasons, not because of the money. I went to work for what I thought was going to be a really good government,
right,
which is a Labour government. But, you know, you can't... All of these, you know, what people say and how they say it, it's all about how do we protect what we've got, and then other people that come along, you know, here's the terms and conditions. If you want to live in Spain, here's the terms and conditions that apply. That's what was being taken away from me and you and everybody else who was ex-UK who'd come to live in Spain under the conditions we thought were going to exist until we decided to leave.
Right. I'll let someone else come on now.
Thank you very much for calling there, Ken. We'll be back with more Viewpoint after this.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Quick flick through the headlines. Next year's GCSE and A-level exams could be delayed. The school's ministers revealed the government's considering pushing them back. It follows Labour's call for pupils in England to be given a month or two extra to catch up on lessons they've missed due to the coronavirus crisis. Meanwhile, as thousands of children in England and Wales return to the classroom, it's claimed most pupils will be 3 months behind in their studies. Donald Trump's appeared to defend an accused murderer. The US president says he believes that Kyle Rittenhouse, who's charged with killing two people during a protest in Wisconsin, was acting in self-defense. For the first time, food from Marks and Spencer is available to buy online, including its popular Percy Pig Sweets. The products are available on the Ocado website following its split from Waitrose. And Ed Sheeran says he and his wife Cherry are completely in love with their baby daughter. The singers first revealed their first child, Lyra Antarctica Seaborn Sheeran, Lass for short, arrived last week. Lyra Antarctica Seaborn Shearer. Lass. There you go. So there's always looking for... I always join up people's names to see what they mean. So you say L-A-S-S, Lass. All right then, Alf.
Antarctica, that's what Antarctica. I mean, must have been bloody cold there.
I was going to... There's a joke in there somewhere, but I'm not sure we can say it on air. But, we've had ocean blue and lily, whatever, Pitani, you know, Falang biscuit barrel or whatever.
What's her name, Cole's bear?
Bear, yeah, not bear. Even, apple. Grapefruit.
Unbelievable.
You know,
since Beckham, that is.
Is it all since you blame it on Beckham, are you?
Yeah, absolutely. Right, I do it on a bridge named my kid.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's Lycra Antarctica Seaborne Shivering, lass, for short. Mm. Yeah, I know somebody called their kid, I think it was something Ocean Blue, and it ended up as SOB, which is quite unfortunate as well, but anyway.
Just before you go on.
Yeah.
Again, what they're doing, they're fobbing it off. We're going to talk about next year's exam. So what is happening about the kids that missed out on their university places this time? Because I was listening the other week, and I did find it fascinating. They can just take a gap year. It'll be good for them. Yeah, where do these people come from? I had three daughters, all went to university. One of them went to a university she didn't like, and she took a year off in order, because we were trying to encourage her not to give up on the university.
Right.
But she had to go to work. Let's go swan around the country for a year.
But it's the same sort of thing that people who believe that, you know, it's all great saying, yeah, well, we've been learning online, but there was a report out this morning that 25% of kids in the UK didn't have that, and especially disadvantaged children. So it's all very well saying, oh, well, you know, little Jimmy can go off and do his learning.
Even if you had it, remember, yeah. Three daughters all teaching, did it all online, and someone said, oh, we've been off for 3 months. No, the kids have been off for 6 months. 6 months, because they've had all the summer, they've had all the bit in between. They're only going back in dribs and drabs now because they're trying to sort out who can go where, do what, do when. So, but I don't want to miss the point.
Yeah.
The Tory government failed on the exams this year.
Yeah.
And 65% of the people from poorer areas were the ones who were supremely affected. And it will be nearly all of those that won't get, and it's not about first choice or second choice of university. And they're now saying, because the universities were encouraged to take, you know, to make more places available, some of them are going to be so overwhelmed with the number of students they've got, the students will miss out on the university, you know, stuff. I know how difficult it was.
I've got a caller on the line. I'll tell you, just go to the caller live on. Thank you very much. Morning, caller live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's John Dodd.
Yes, John.
Good morning to you. Fine programme. Less of the cronies this time. Now, listen, you mustn't keep going on about coronavirus. It doesn't exist.
Right, well, we're talking about universities now, John, so...
Yes, I know, but the thing is, that's one falsehood. Universities is another thing. The man's coming out with some interesting things. But the thing is, you mustn't keep on about it, because you should have listened to the half a million people in London.
There weren't half a million people in London, John.
Nah, that's what they said, but we saw the helicopter site. There was in excess of half a million. Don't tell me.
I'm just saying what's reported, John. Anyway, like I said, we're not talking about that. We've been talking about it for about an hour and a half before now. So thank you very much for your call in, Alf.
I don't want to even mention it. So, the last thing on the Cummings and this new bloke. In 1997, when Labour won power, one of the first things they found out is that you had the civil servants. Remember, civil servants are there to do their job, whoever is the government. They're supposed to be apolitical, and above a certain grade in the civil service, you're not even allowed to be a member of a political party. So, you know, they try to keep them, you know, apart as such. But the one thing that the Labour government found out within a year is how difficult it was, to understand how the civil service worked, because they hadn't had anybody in there, and two, how they could, the civil service could deflect, manoeuvre, delay, all sorts of things that were going on. So you get a frustration. So Blair and Brown, you know, because a lot of that is financial stuff, they sit down and they say, what are we going to do? So I'll now reintroduce what we talked about a while ago. They introduced a thing called a special advisor. There were loads of them. Every civil service department had SPADs. And that's what they were introduced for. They're not there doing the civil services job. They're doing it, reporting back to the centre about what is happening in the civil service to make sure that the people who are being told to do something. Now, if you remember a year ago or Theresa May, the end of Theresa May's, there was a big issue about one of the top civil service people was manipulating something in one of the departments which was deflecting her negotiations. Yeah, it was probably this guy who Johnson's got rid of, because they got rid of him pretty quick. But this is what everybody will suffer. So I have no compunction. Johnson will put his people in. Johnson will make sure the civil servants do their jobs. So long as they're all treated evenly. I mean, this guy who they got rid of, he's going to probably walk off with a million or two in compensation. So I ain't upset about him. But you never seem to get an understanding from people that if I'm in charge, my decisions are what you have to do. Not, I'm in charge, I'm going to make a decision. Can you see if you can make a way, see if you can make it work? Mm. No, that's not how it works. And we know if we're heading for the cliff, the brick wall, whatever terminology you want to use, for a no-deal Brexit, then what Johnson needs is for the civil servants to make sure that all of the data, all of the background, all of the research is all aiming in that direction, not coming up and you know, leaking stuff to the press about we could have done this, we could have got that, we could have negotiated something, we could have bought our face masks through Europe, all that junk that was going on. So if you've got a team and you want your team to pull in one direction, you will put people in charge. And like I say, the difference is Cummings hasn't got, I don't think he's got the wherewithal to be able to talk to people in a way where it will persuade them to do something.
Yeah, I've got a thing here saying, someone that Dom wants. Also, universities will still take applicants with rubbish grades. Why? Because they need the money. Having said that, I'd be fed up having to pay 900,000 quid a term and get online tutorials. Another one in saying, echoing Sharon, it seems a waste of time going to university and training to be a doctor for 7 years, when a couple of hours reading the internet apparently qualifies you to give advice, dangerous or not, over the radio. And also, pension uprating was covered in the withdrawal agreement that is already a treaty under international law. The no deal people talk about now is largely to do with trade, not citizens' rights. So to change the uprating of pensions, there would have to be a reopening of the withdrawal agreement, something that for now is not contemplated. And finally, David Icke was one of the leaders of the London protest, which should tell us something. It's not that long ago he was warning that alien lizards would take over the world. Thank you very much for those comments.
Johnson, he's a lizard.
He's a lizard. It's the Illuminati, you know. It always makes me sort of like, and because as you know, I'm a dark and twisted person the best of times, but when people say, oh, it's a new world order coming, it's a new world order, and it's like, well, you know, if having seen what Trump and Johnson and whatever and Sanchez is doing, I quite welcome our lizard, our reptilian overlords, because they couldn't do a much worse job as we're doing at the moment.
Well, I thought Sanchez has been pretty cute, actually, because he was put behind the eight
ball
by the regions.
Pretty cute.
Yeah, cute in terms of negotiating his position.
Right.
The regions start having a go at him and saying, you've unlocked too early, you've done this, you've done that. He justifies it by saying, but we've got to keep the economy going, whatever. And then cleverly just turns to the regional administrators and say, listen, I'm not going to affect the economy of Seville. You're the regional authorities. If you want Seville sorted out, you lock it down. You'll have our permission. That puts the onus on all the regional. And you've noticed for the last 2 weeks, as much as the numbers have gone up, it's been fewer and fewer and fewer conversations about locking down Malaga, locking down Seville, locking down Madrid. Fewer and fewer, because it's not a responsibility of the government anymore. And Sanchez has said quite clearly, we are not going to put on a national state of
alarm.
Alert, yeah. National state of alert. We're not going to do that. So he's put out, it's very clever. Politically, I think that's very clever, because the Andalusian leader, you know, the one with the biggest lump and the most problems, the most...
The biggest lump?
Problems. Well, yeah, it's the biggest region, isn't it?
Oh, I thought, I was wondering, I thought it was like Quasimodo or something.
Still a lump, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's got Gibraltar hanging off of it.
Steady, let's let them go there. We're into the last 50 minutes of the show, 15 seconds of the show, Alf. I don't want to start going to the Gibraltar right now.
No.
Final thoughts, please.
Final thoughts are, well, yeah, I have my fears. No, I don't have any fears. I have my concerns about the kids going back to school. I have my concerns about people in the cities just doing what they fancy and the numbers going up. But as far as things go, I know the hospitals are getting more people in. But it's still not
safe. Alf, got to cut you short, unfortunately. Yep. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Alf. Also, thanks to Andrew Hurrell, to ours, to Els, and Andres Gallardo. This show will be repeated at 6 o'clock. Stephen Ritson is up next.
...endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.